Welcome back to Wellness Wednesdays. I'm your host, Eric Collard. This week, another special guest, Dr. Jeff Outerbridge, a chiropractor who's had a pretty illustrious career and now has started or has helped grow World Spine Care. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
So how did you get into this, the crack and rack world of chiropractic? And I'm setting you up here, but...
Well, actually, I used to think chiropractors were all quacks. Yeah. And I had gotten into university and did a degree in human kinetics. And I've always been interested in the human body and human performance, done a lot of sports. And so I was looking for something that allowed me to engage with people and help them. But I couldn't get my head around wanting to be a doctor or a physiotherapist or a massage therapist. There was nothing out there that really seemed to fit for me. And I didn't even consider chiropractic at the time because, the word on the street in the 80s was chiropractors were quacks. And that's sort of what everybody believed. And then I ended up moving in with a bunch of chiropractic students in Toronto. And I moved there after doing some ergonomics work. And as I... started talking to them and learning more about it, I just suddenly realized that this is actually what I had been looking for all along. I just didn't know that's what chiropractic was. So I had finished a master's and I had paid off all my school debt and I applied and went right back into debt.
As I say, we're all, when you think you're out, they pull you back in.
That's right. Yeah. So it was kind of like I had to do it. Because it was exactly what I had been looking for. And I realized after a while that it just had all the interests. I was able to diagnose and treat, follow up with patients, know whether I had done the right thing or the wrong thing. I could apply a lot of the information I had learned through all the anatomy and the neuroscience masters that I had done and my athletic background and my interest in biomechanics. And it just all kind of tied together. So I was being pulled by the chiropractic, but at the same time, I was working as an ergonomics consultant. I had my own business at the time. And as much as I loved being in the field and doing the actual work in ergonomics, I found that just sitting at my desk writing reports was killing me. So everything kind of aligned and off I went.
And was there the straw that broke the camel's back to say, this is exactly what I wanted to do with chiropractic? Because you kind of bounced around a little bit earlier in your career?
No, you mean when I started as a chiropractor itself?
Or what, like, was there one thing that kind of got you saying, this is exactly what I want? What was it about chiropractic that really made
it,
you?
I suddenly realized, they're not all quacks.
Yeah.
It is very evidence-based. There's a lot of good science supporting the model and the approach the chiropractors have. It was something where... I was able to actually do something with my hands instead of prescription or surgery or referral or like I could actually do something with my hands. I could actually engage with patients on a more continuous basis so that I could have some impact on the way they think about their health, on the direction they go with their health, instead of having really short appointments. And also that ability to diagnose was very important too. I needed to be able to make the decisions and then follow up on those decisions and know, did I do the right thing or didn't I do the right thing? Am I getting the person better? Am I not? So it was kind of everything about it. And I know now, right now it's exactly the same kind of model that physiotherapists have. And so it's not really the only thing, but at the time it was. So that it was kind of everything about it.
Okay. And what do you have to say now that you're drinking the Kool-Aid, what do you have to say about the people that say chiropractors, like you're at a dinner party and people are like, I'm a chiropractor. Oh, like you can see kind of the expression on their face change.
Yeah.
What do you, like, how do you approach that?
Well, most people who have their mind set like that, it's just not really worth the conversation. It's the people who sort of engage you in conversation and are curious. I'm more than happy to talk about it. But usually when people have their mindset, you're not going to change their mind. But there are, let's say our profession is a very colorful one, which has a very broad spectrum of philosophies. So there are chiropractors who have philosophies that do not jive with lots of people. And so I understand when people come to me and say, or give me that vibe, I say I'm a chiropractor. And it just happened a couple of weeks ago. And, the people kind of move away. I know where they're coming from. I understand where they get the information. And I understand that. It's just too bad that when they hear about one part of chiropractic, they give up on the whole profession rather than kind of going, okay, well, maybe there's something else. Yeah. And so there is a broad spectrum. And I practice the way I practice. I promote my mode of practice and I kind of leave it at that. There's the rest of the profession, they're doing their thing and they're doing it their way. And that's cool. I just sort of do it.
Yeah. It's weird that people already have this. And I guess it's my mom has the same way. Cause I remember when I started seeing a chiropractor in university to help my shoulder and the rest of my body. And I was like, well, I'm not sure about that. Cause she had a bad experience in the 70s, which I think before kind of, I don't want to say chiropractors knew what they were doing, but I think some of the stuff was kind of, some of it was half-hearted, and I'm not saying all of them, but some of them. How would you define your style or your chiropractic
You just dropped a whole bomb in the middle of there and then avoided that whole bomb. Yeah, let's go straight into how you practice. Yeah. I would say that my style of practice is an evidence-based style. So evidence-based means you take the best available evidence from the best quality of research. But that kind of ends at a point where there are a lot of things that we do that we don't have information for. So you take that best available evidence as your foundation. You add in your best clinical judgment clinical information from our profession as well. And then along with that, you add in patient preferences and perceptions. And that is essentially the definition of evidence-based care. It's using the best available evidence, clinical knowledge, and patient preferences. That's evidence-based care. So I would say I fall into that. Now, certainly now that I'm working with World Spine Care and working with a lot of the leading sort of researchers and clinicians in all fields, including surgery, physiotherapy, chiropractic, I'm more up to date and very current on what really is the most current evidence for certainly spinal disorders. So I would say that's kind of my model of care with very much a patient focus. I remember when I first started chiropractic college, a friend of mine who's a chiropractor said, whatever you learn, try to figure out how it's going to benefit your patient. And so all through school and ever since school, that's kind of been the way I've thought about information that I gained. How does that relate to the patient? How is it going to benefit the patient? And when a patient comes in, the most important information you want to gather from them is what is it you want out of care? What do you want? Where do you want to go with this treatment? Why are you coming to see me? And what is your perception on what's happened? And what are your expectations of practice? We now know that this is part of the evidence base, is a lot of pain starts with musculoskeletal bobos, mechanical problems, postural stuff, repetitive strain, those sorts of things. But what moves run-of-the-mill pain that comes and goes that we kind of deal with and forget about, what moves that towards disability are psychosocial risk factors. Those are the really important things that we need to focus on in clinical practice, which is some of the key ones are catastrophizing, meaning, oh, this pain's terrible. It's going to destroy my life. I'm never going to be the same.
We're all going to die.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That's not quite that extreme. So there's catastrophizing. There's fear avoidance. I shouldn't do anything that's going to make this pain worse. Or if I do anything and it hurts, I should just stop.
Yeah.
Passive coping, meaning that I just have to sit around and do nothing and let somebody else take care of me. Low self-efficacy, which is this concept that I don't have any control over what's going on. I'm sort of at the mercy of whatever. So these psychosocial risk factors are things that you need to address with every single patient that walks in the door. So you want to identify, do they exist and within this particular person? And if they do exist, then one of the most important things or most beneficial things you can do is education and talking to them about pain, and that the most important thing is to keep moving and to not worry about it. It is going to get better, because certainly I'm talking about back pain in general, and for low back pain, it is something that we don't cure. We try to manage bouts of it and try to minimize the frequency, duration, and intensity of these bouts. It is going to be a recurrent thing in all our lives. So it is going to come back, but it's also going to go away. And it's not something that when it does happen that we should get sort of catastrophic about. It's something that we can work through, stay active, stay positive about it, and know that it'll eventually go away. That's the vast majority of back pain. So those are important things to know about your patient. So that's kind of a big part of what I'm trying to incorporate. And anytime you recommend treatment, that treatment should... It usually does, involve some manual therapy. It should always involve some active care, so exercise, and then it should involve some education. And at the same time, you're trying to empower your patients and inspire your patients. So trying to get them to take a step forward. It doesn't have to be a big step, but just one step forward from how, from their sort of health consciousness from when they came in. And so that's kind of the package you're trying to offer the patient, but you offer that package framed within what do they want? Where do they want to go? What are their expectations and their preferences?
I think that's a very radical change from the way that traditional medicine has been practiced, especially in North America. From I can tell you from my own experience and from what I've seen around, I had a back injury in the late 90s, and it wasn't patient-focused. It was like, here's some meds, and here's, and like it was, right. It was kind of like, here's you go, and you're going to like it. There was no empowering of the patient back then. And I'm not trying to paint like a point like traditional medicine versus chiropractic, but I think that's one of the biggest appeals of a lot of the newer, well, I mean, they might not be new, but new to North America, you know, the naturopaths and a lot of chiros that are forward thinking, because it involves the people. Because at the end of the day, a lot of stuff that you mentioned, people don't realize how much impact they have on their own lives.
It's true, but you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's the only the alternative medicine side of healthcare that's doing it. A lot of doctors are adopting this approach. I mean, evidence-based care is evidence-based care.
Yeah.
Whether you're a doctor or a chiropractor or a physiotherapist, it doesn't matter if you're practicing in evidence-based care. And there are programs like the Core Back Tool that's put out by, I think it's Ontario Ministry of Health, that is a tool geared for doctors to offer evidence-based approaches to the management of low back pain. Fantastic tool, and we've taken that and adopted it in our teaching of medical doctors in Botswana and some of the other countries. We now have our clinics. But the medical profession is right up front there too. The problem is your experience was with a particular doctor that didn't have that knowledge.
Yeah.
And as you go forward, if you go to a chiro or a physio or a doctor or whoever, if they're not up to date in the evidence, you're going to have a wrong experience. But if you hit one of those that does know the evidence, you're going to have a very positive experience. And what we found, certainly in setting up the clinics around the world with World Spine Care, the standard treatment for back pain was, here's paracetamol or Tylenol or ibuprofen or buprofen, whatever you call it, wherever you are.
Yeah.
And then if that didn't work, it was more powerful meds and opioids and, you know, all the problems we're having with that. We now know, and there's a lot of evidence, certainly very recently published evidence on paracetamol and Tylenol, that it is not effective for acute and chronic low back pain. And all the opioid crisis that's going on, there's a big awareness and a lot of research that's starting to shut down these old practices that didn't work. And that's not just alternative. This is actually being driven by mainstream medicine and research. So it's just the trick is finding people within your community that are following evidence-based practices and are keeping up to date with it. Yeah. That's the key.
And I'm not picking on doctors. I'm just, it's like that. There's chiros that are terrible, there are mechanics that are terrible, there are policemen that are terrible, they're everywhere. It's just that I find maybe the chiros, they have maybe a shorter leash. Like people are like, I don't know, they're still a little more apprehensive, shall we say? Like,
I think the
next generation is a lot of younger folks that I know, they love it because they can be involved in the solution. And a lot of again, maybe it's the newer chiros that are dealing more with that care.
I don't think the span of philosophies has changed a lot in chiropractic. It's just those who are doing evidence-based care now have more information and better evidence to guide them.
Okay.
But those who don't really want to follow evidence-based care, who are following philosophies that originated at the turn of the century and haven't really changed, that, you know, they haven't changed them since then, they're still doing the same thing and they're still following that. And the other thing is that I want to clarify, there's a difference between pain management and performance care. So within our profession, you can have regular spinal adjustments for performance care. And it also can work sometimes with pain management. But often what gets mixed up is you go into a professional for pain management, and what they give you is performance care. And they're trying to give an overall sort of performance, whereas you need to manage the pain first. And then they can take you to performance, and that's okay. And wellness and everything else, it's all right. Yeah. But when you walk into with pain and they're focusing first on performance and wellness and not just dealing with the pain, that gets very frustrating for a consumer. And they end up walking away kind of going, what the heck was that? So it's just a matter of focusing on, again, it's patient preference. So if they come in saying, get me out of pain, we'll get them out of pain. But if they come back in and say, okay, now I'm out of pain, and now I agree with what you want to do about performance or wellness and everything else, then take them down that road. So it's just maybe sometimes taking them down the performance wellness road too soon.
Because at the base, everyone needs to be able to, you know, have a pain-free, you know...
And my personal preference for performance care is for you to do that yourself through yoga, through Pilates, through regular exercise, through whatever. That to me is performance care.
Before we get into more of the World Spine Care stuff, because there's some very fascinating stuff. I've heard a couple of the stories that over the years that you mentioned. And how would you, because you've got a, I mean, from what I know from you, you've got a very hands-on kind of style. Mm-hmm. Like I know ART is in your bag. What else do you...
Well, as I was saying, if you look at the entire spectrum of evidence-based interventions, manual therapies, so I do lots of different manual therapies. And again, it depends on what the patient needs is. So it may be something that's more a soft tissue release type of thing. It may be instrument assisted with things like Graston, or there's all kinds of different tools that you can use.
I call it the spoons, but
yeah, the spoons. There's also just regular massage techniques. I've learned some great techniques from massage therapists that I've worked with. Mobilization, stretching, exercise protocols. Again, the education is a really big part of it, and empowering your patients. Spinal adjustments, you know, obviously are a big part of it. I am a chiropractor, and they're a big part of that as well. And all of these things that are in my toolkit are things that do have solid enough evidence behind them, and also clinically I've seen them very effective. Now, you know, we as professionals always think that what, like every chiropractor thinks what they do is the greatest and the best, right? And the reason we have this kind of, and it's the same with physios and anybody who does manual therapy, because what happens is you treat the patients and the patient comes in and goes, wow, I feel great, man, you're awesome. And we thrive on that. And when we hear that, we get really excited, but that's almost all we hear. And it's not because...
Confirmation bias,
And it's not because we're always getting everybody better. It's because the people who don't get better often disappear from care without telling you. And so you have this real biased vision of you being like the most awesome chiropractor on earth or physiotherapist. And then what also happens is we have people coming in saying, oh, you know what? I've been to physio, I've been to chiros, I've been to everybody else, and nobody helped me. And a lot of times they'll say, I've been to physio, it didn't help. So here I am in your office. And so they think, oh, well, wow, I do a better job than physios. But it's because that physio that they came from probably has people coming in going, I went to chiropractors all the time and they didn't help. And that physio's got that false perception because the person's coming to you because that particular physio didn't help. But you don't see all the, you know, the 90% of the people that physio did help. And so when we work in silos, which is what a lot of chiropractors and physiotherapists do, they work in a silo. And so they get this very distorted impression of their therapies and their sort of value in the whole healthcare world. And we need to be much more, I think, truly objective about what we can and what we can't do and how effective we really are. And by tracking all your patients, which nobody really does, but through World Spine Care, this part of our research model is tracking every single patient. And then you start to see, okay, well, this is really actually how effective we are. And we have objective measures for outcomes and we track patients right to the very end. So we're starting to get a much clearer picture of that. But I don't think any chiropractor out there has any true, or physio or doctor, has true understanding of how effective they actually really are, unless they're collecting this sort of data in their clinics.
Yeah, and I think that would be rare. And the same thing with a mechanic or a policeman or any you know, profession or PR professional, anyone.
But we're actually starting to take these models that we use with World Spine Care, and we're adapting them to our clinic here in Ottawa. So we're going to have a lot of patient outcome information in the future.
Very cool. Speaking of World Spine Care, how, well, can you let people know what it is and how you got involved with it.
Okay, so World Spine Care is a nonprofit organization. We're registered in Europe, Canada, and the U.S. And our mission statement is bringing evidence-based, sustainable, integrated spine care to underserved communities around the world. So these three pillars of our mission statement are very important. Everything we do is framed around those. So obviously, evidence-based, as I've already talked about, evidence-based, and so we're using best available evidence, clinical wisdom, and patient preference. So there is this patient focus to it. When we talk about sustainable, we are creating spine care specialties within existing healthcare systems in developing countries. And so we're not, because we embed them inside of the government healthcare system, it is sustainable and scalable. So once we get in there, we implement it. We facilitate the training of others. So we have scholarship programs for people to go and train to become chiropractors. We don't have any at physiotherapy schools yet, but we do it at chiropractic colleges. So we train them. They come back eventually to take over. And when they take over, the government takes over the full financial responsibility of that program. And we continue to supervise and facilitate the expansion across the country. So Botswana was the first country we went into.
And how long ago was that?
That was in 2011 when we first landed on the ground.
Yeah.
And we opened a rural clinic in a small village and then another clinic in a district hospital 40 kilometers away. So we could study what's the difference between village populations and demographics and outcomes, as well as a little more urban, not super urban. And so those clinics have been running since 2011. So we have this permanent presence on the ground. So
and they're sustainable?
They're sustainable in that the government already pays for sort of three quarters.
Okay.
And we provide clinicians and funds certain things, but they support most of it. And then once their students that we have training at chiropractic colleges in Canada and the States right now, once they come back, the government takes over everything. We are about to open a major spine center in the main referral hospital in the capital of Botswana. So that'll be our third clinic. And the person running that will be supervising all the other clinics. And then we're already talking about expansion to all the other main referral areas in Francistown and Maun and Khansi and other parts of Botswana. So that's the first one we're actually seeing already. And we can see it's a clear end to that expansion across the country to bring full spine care, evidence-based, sort of integrated spine care to people across the country. So that's kind of the model.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing in Ghana, but in Ghana, it's actually a Ghanaian medical doctor trained as a chiropractor who has implemented the program. So we've already hit sustainability and it's fully funded. In Dominican Republic, we have the Ministry of Health is paying for a lot. Local businesses are supporting a lot. And then we've just selected a student to go and train. So within 4 years, again, that will be completely run. And so we're kind of improving the quality of care for spinal disorders within their existing healthcare system. The unique one is in India, we actually have engaged with the School of Physical Therapy, the Mahatma Gandhi Mission Institute of Health Science, and school's already there, clinicians are already there. What we're bringing is our toolkit, we'll call it, and our model, and then we're going to start developing curriculums for training future generations in primary spine care and evidence-based primary spine care. So that's got sustainability. So that's the sustainability. It is integrated. We're integrating with surgeons, physiotherapists, rheumatologists, whoever happens to be on the ground who has a stake in spine care. We have a yoga project that we launched in Botswana. So we're integrating with
very
yoga
cool
teachers.
Video online about that. Yeah.
Pardon?
There's a very cool video online about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The one that Aaron Moon did. So we're actually building capacity. That's, again, part of the sustainability. So we've had two spine care conferences in Botswana. We're going to do another one in Botswana in 2018, hoping to do one in Dominican Republic in 2020. So bringing evidence-based information to the healthcare profession in each of these countries. We've got patient education, community education, and then we're empowering the communities by actually training them. And one of the big projects is this yoga project, where we actually select a group of people from the community and teach them to become yoga teachers, to teach yoga to their community. And we focus it on people who have limited mobility or pain, so that we're actually dealing with people who are most the most affected by spinal pain and helping them out. And it's amazing to see these women. Some of them don't even have a primary school education, who are now have created this hub of information and hub of support for people in the community with pain, and has really empowered that community. So it's really exciting to see those sort of capacity building things grow and develop. And so we're further expanding that to other countries as well.
Very cool. And so you've done some work. Obviously, you've lived in Botswana and, mm-hmm. and some of the other places. What are some of the needs that you see out there that that we wouldn't see in a North American society, for example?
Well, the difference is here, if you have back pain and it becomes a disability for any period of time, like you actually have to put aside things that you can do. You can't, you know, you can't work or you can't do sports or whatever else. Most people are supported with some sort of insurance that covers them during that period of time that they're away. And sometimes that insurance and that support can actually get in the way of optimal patient outcomes. But in developing countries or in low and middle income countries, when somebody has back pain, if they can't work, they can't put money on food on the table, they can't provide money, they can't. And that can, if it goes on for a long enough period of time, they can descend into poverty. So it's a much more significant issue when somebody has back pain in a low and middle income country than they have here. So here people are like, it's a nuisance, it's a problem. And I even remember thinking, oh, who cares about spine care? There are other worries in the developing world, like malaria and everything else. But the crazy thing is, low back pain is the leading cause of disability worldwide. It affects 1 billion people. And this is the killer. I think that's a bad way of putting it. This is the crazy statistic from the Global Burden of Disease report that came out in 2015 and has been substantiated since. Low back pain contributes more to the global burden of disease, including death and disability, than HIV, malaria, diabetes, Alzheimer's, stroke, lung and breast cancer combined, lower respiratory infections, and traffic injuries. So it is a really, really significant issue. And that's really why World Spine Care evolved. It's not because a bunch of chiropractors or a bunch of spine care people just want to go out and help people. It's because there's this serious problem out there that needs to be addressed effectively, and it's not. And as I was saying, in other countries, most of the time you go to a doctor and they give you paracetamol or Tylenol and send you home, and that's it. There's no active care, there's no education, there's like nothing is evidence-based about that intervention. And that's what we were finding every single place we went to. So creating quality evidence-based care within these existing healthcare systems makes sense. And it is scalable, sustainable, it's integrated, and all the other healthcare professionals that we work with, it's amazing. We're just integrated right into the program. We're given equal responsibility for every other healthcare professional, whether it be surgeon or a medical doctor or a physiotherapist. We all have this sort of equal responsibility and role within the healthcare system. There isn't this hierarchy. There aren't these turf wars going on that happen in North America that just stand in the way of optimal patient care. It's all of this sort of, you know, animosity and turf war that's really at the detriment of the patient. And so when we go into these patients, we don't
care. The patient doesn't really care who gets them better. They just want to get better.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all they care about. Yeah. They just want to get better. Yeah. And it's annoying that all of this other historical stuff is getting in the way as well.
One more question before we get into my usual ending questions. You had a good practice here in Ottawa. What made you, you know, end all of it and then and then go live in a third world country?
At the time when I heard about it, it was like a light went off. I've got to do this. And I didn't even think about what I was leaving. All I thought about was where I was going and what I was going to do.
And I mean, it's one thing to go to Botswana for a couple of weeks, work on your tan.
Yeah.
And there's another thing to like put your life in a container and then ship it over.
Yeah. Well, I come from a family of missionaries. So my grandfather was a United Church missionary in Japan for 40 years. My dad was born in Japan and lived there till he was 13. My uncle was a medical missionary, an orthopedic surgeon in China for 13 years. And so there were a few things that evolved out of that. I heard the stories. They were exciting. I heard all these stories about living and growing up in different cultures and different parts of the world. And that was all very exciting. But it was also this kind of message of service that came along with this missionary mentality of within my family. And so I never really thought about it at the time, but now that I look back at it, that probably was a part of what drove me. But I had wanted to do international development work for a long time, and like I said, I didn't think that low back pain was an issue, and I'd never do it through chiropractic, but I really wanted to be a chiropractor. So when this came through, it's like the two amazing things that I really wanted to put together came together. And so I just jumped on board without any hesitation, didn't look back, and then essentially liquidated my life here, sold my practice. Yeah. You know, we had sold all our properties and put everything in a container and shipped off, and we had no idea how long we were going to stay. It turned out to be 2 years in Botswana, but you know, we were kind of going, well, let's open it up for 10 years maybe as a maximum and see how it goes, because we just had a 1.5-year-old when we took off, so now we have 2, but we thought 10 years was a reasonable limit to put on it, but it ended up being 2. And so we've done a few other travels. We spent 5 weeks in the Dominican Republic together while we were opening that clinic. But otherwise, now I'm just sort of doing 2 weeks at a time and not...
working on the air miles.
Yeah.
All right. Time for some final questions. Because I know you're a busy man and you need to get back to your family and the rest of your life. But we appreciate the time. What does wellness mean to you? With all that experience that you've seen from all over the world and your experience as a chiropractor here and as an athlete and all that stuff.
It's kind of funny to ask me, because I don't deal in wellness anymore in the countries that we're in.
Yeah.
So there's getting people out of pain, and then there's optimizing people's health performance. So most of the stuff that I deal with overseas is just getting people out of pain and functioning, because that is a huge step forward and makes such a big difference. Yeah. And most people in other countries, to try to explain the concept of wellness, it just doesn't relate in their culture. Or so,
I'm
you know,
laughing at you. I can see kind of this happening. Like,
well, it's tough to do that, because it's not a concept within some cultures to think about optimizing health. Yeah. The concept is just, I just got to get up and do what I got to do today. And they don't think beyond that. So we in here have the luxury of being able to entertain concepts of wellness and expand in research and study and, you know, discuss the concept of wellness. For me personally, it's optimizing every little component, like best sleep habits, best dietary habits and nutritional habits. And I'm one who's like, just eat really good, healthy, organic, balanced diets. And to me, that's sort of where I go. Regular exercise, a big part of wellness is community. You know, if you're isolated on your own, I don't care how well you take care of your body. Community is one of the most important things. And this is something that I do see in all the other places I go to. Community is very rich and very alive. And so when somebody in the community is suffering or is having a difficult time, everybody rallies around them. And I think that's something that we're missing here. And so to me, community is a very big part of wellness. And it's something that I like to try to build and develop wherever I go. Like the gym in the garage, working out with lots of friends. That's part of building community and supporting each other. So that's a big part of it. And that goes along with the whole aspect of mental health. And a big part of for me, wellness is when you take your focus away from yourself and away from this internal focus and trying to figure out what's going on with you, and you take it and just focus on helping other people, then that to me is one of the most healthful mentalities that you can have, is actually acting in the service of others or helping other people out rather than spending a lot of time focusing on self. And this again is, it ties into community. And so there's so much more to it than just trying to, wellness is not about taking pills or about doing the proper yoga sequences or whatever else. It's just such a big, it's so much more than all of that. As much as I'm very much an advocate of yoga, I'm not talking any of this down. Yeah. It's just, people tend to focus too much on self and not enough on community and community service. So I'd say that's my biggest part of wellness. Yeah.
That's a nice, long-winded way of saying wellness. Yeah. I like it.
I do tend to talk too much.
That's okay. It's all part of your charm. One last thing. This is going to be very easy, and it should be fairly short. Where can people find out more information about you and World Spine Care?
WorldSpineCare.org. You type in World Spine Care. We're the only World Spine Care. Yeah. I'm practicing here in Ottawa at Ottawa Collaborative Care Center, and that's 102 Lewis. And their website is oc3.ca.
Okay.
So that's, and then if you, that's probably the best place to get in touch with me, because any of the info, like if you click on info and want to know anything about World Spine Care, it comes into my inbox, so I'm the one answering you. And then
so you are World Spine Care. Yeah.
No, not at all. It's just I happen to be monitoring the information part.
Well, Dr. Arbridge, thank you very much. Again, we can talk about this for a long time, but some people have other things to do, and we have other things to do. So thank you for your time and for information. And
Thanks for your interest.
And we might have to have you get you on some of the latest and greatest that comes out of World Spine Care. Mm-hmm. We can do a part two. So
that'd be great.
Again, you've been listening to Wellness Wednesdays. I am your host, Eric Collard. And until next week, be well.